Hi, Max. How you doing? Am I on time?
Yes, you are perfectly on time. Welcome to WSJU Radio at St. John's University. We have the one and only, the legendary Captain Midnight. They also call him the Schmoozer, Steve Summers. Steve Summers, how are you?
Well, I'm good, Max, and looking forward to this, that I've been looking forward to it since we made contact some time ago. So it's an absolute honor for me to spend a couple of minutes with you, and a lot of fun, I'm sure it'll be.
Thank you. I'm sure you've been following St. John's basketball, and they didn't have a great game the other night.
Well, I tell you this, we want them to do well. I mean, they have such a history, and to get back into the mix and to win another championship, I think a lot of us, even those of us who never went to St. John's, would love to see them do well, because they're a New York City basketball team, and they're the kind of team that would inspire even the passive college basketball fan to get behind them. I mean, they have that kind of clout and that kind of standing within New York City. So for them to do well, even those who didn't go or attend as St. John's would be rooting for them. I mean, obviously teams that play them and teams in the conference, et cetera, would not be rooting for them. But a lot of people, again, who never even attended St. John's, because they're a city team and because of their background, because of their history, because of their tradition, a lot of us would like to see them win.
Yeah, I definitely want to see them win. Grew up a St. John's fan, and I was surprised when Chris Mullin stepped down from being a coach, because I thought he was going to really succeed with this team.
Yeah, he probably did too. You know, probably not. How could he not take the position? But I don't think he was having a lot of fun. He wasn't winning, and so forth and so on. But his legacy, if not as a coach, certainly as a player, I mean, forever. And he's in the College Basketball Hall of Fame and the NBA Hall of Fame, and, you know, is front and center. One of the many glorious faces of St. John's basketball, even if coaching didn't work out for him.
Mm-hmm. Something I was surprised about, and which the fans are going to hear about now and the people who are tuned in, that I'm dropping an interview next week that I did with the great Lou Carnesecca, and I'm very surprised how involved he still is with the team. He talks to Mike Anderson frequently.
Right. Oh, well, the sweater.
Yeah.
I mean, you're talking the sweater.
Yep.
On WFAN years ago, I worked with a guy, Russ Salzberg, who does some TV now, but at the time when we were working on the radio together, he was calling himself the sweater. But let's face it, Max, there's only one sweater.
Yes, there is, and that's Lou Carnesecca. You're absolutely right about that. I want to get into your backstory, because I wanted to bring you on the show so that people can get to know you better if they don't. You're Captain Midnight. I want to get into the backstory of you growing up in San Francisco and coming over to New York to follow your path and dreams of being on overnights at the Fan.
Yeah, well, the dream was to work in New York. I mean, you can look at my high school yearbook and my graduation picture with all the things that I had done in high school, and at the very bottom of all the listing of the things that you did in your 4 years there, where I went to high school in San Francisco, ambition, and it said New York sportscaster. So that was my dream even back then in high school, to come to New York, because that to me is the center of the world. It was then, it is now, the greatest city in the world, and where sports mattered more than I thought anywhere else, including San Francisco, and also working among the best in media and sports broadcasting. And so it was my dream, my goal, my destination. And if you talk to anyone taking an airplane from, say, the left coast to the right coast, it's about a 6-hour, 5.5-hour, 6-hour flight. It took me 22 years to make that flight. Mm-hmm. So that was a long, long flight for me. But, yeah, and, you know, I stuck with it. But still, you know, it's about timing, being in the right place at the right time, and also being lucky that you're able to realize such a dream being from out of town, because, you know, usually, and now with radio, it's a different dynamic. I mean, people don't even need radio to get the information. Mm-hmm. You know, they can get it from the palm of their hand or from the top of their desk. So, and so many streaming. I mean, there's so many ways. But they, with radio then, way back when I started over 30 years ago at the Fan, they brought me in from out of town. Today, they would hire from within, whether it's a production person, whether it's a board operator, an engineer, whether it's a part-timer on the air doing updates, whatever it would be, because back then radio could afford to bring in somebody, fly them out, put them up in a hotel until they found a place to stay. Well, that's unheard of now in this kind of financial climate for radio. So, again, very lucky that I was able to sneak in when I did. And also, you know, I mean, you want to be good. Yeah. I mean, it's not false humility. But I think if you really talk to anyone in the business, Max, and you certainly have done that, they would express a great deal of gratitude for having the opportunity. And then with a little bit of luck and some hard work, it works out and you have a career.
Where do you believe the passion came from for you wanting to be a sports broadcaster in radio?
Well, I wore TV. I mean, I did TV for 17 years, you know, in another lifetime. You know, I mean, 30 years on the radio here. I'll do a little bit of TV at MSG in the beginning. Mm-hmm. And they had me on a couple of those interview shows and panel discussions about sports. But most of my TV, of course, I did TV in San Francisco, Sacramento, Atlanta, and also Los Angeles. I did 17 years of TV, and really, between you and me and the lamppost, wanted to come to New York and take on Scott Clark, take on Len Berman, take on Warner Wolf, take on Gary Gerald, you know, all of the sports people that were on TV when I first came in 1987 to WFAN, but you know, that wasn't going to be. And I actually was the last hire at WFAN. They didn't know about whether they should have a live person going midnight to 6 or whether they should have syndicated programming or whether they should just repeat daytime programming. And fortunately for me, as their last hire, it was, you know, a chance to be in New York and do something new and do something different, because WFAN, as you know, Max, the first all-sports 24-hour radio station in America. So, and I, the first overnight host. And the Captain Midnight came from an old 1930s radio show. Wow. The producer I had back in the beginning thought of starting at midnight using the opening theme of the Captain Midnight radio show from the 1930s. And I said, no, I don't think I want to do that. I'm going to call it Midnight Madness. And the program director at the time, the guy that hired me, he didn't like that, but he did like the idea of Captain Midnight. So that was the opening that we used, taken from the 1930s national radio show with Captain Midnight. Mm-hmm.
Did you do any college radio when you were at Berkeley?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Oh, sure. I did play-by-play. But, hey, you know something, Max? I didn't have really the aptitude for it. I don't think I was very good at it. I was okay, you know, but I'm being as honest with you as possible. I don't think I was really that good at it. Let's put it this way. I was no John Minko.
That's interesting. I would have never thought that.
No, well, I don't know where you would get play-by-play for me doing sports talk. Yeah. I was okay, but I don't think I was very good. I'm not. That's not any false humility. I just don't think I was very good. When I went to work for a TV station, the ABC affiliate in Atlanta, they wanted me to do Atlanta Falcon preseason games with an ABC national voice by a guy by the name of Dave Dials, long retired. But for years and years, he did college football games on ABC. And the station that I was working for, doing sports on the news, and they wanted me to do these Falcon preseason games. It was absolutely awful. In other words, if Dave Dials doing play-by-play, if he was talking, all right, there's the punt, and the ball is taken on the 5-yard line, it's up to the 5, the 10, the 15, tackled at the 19-yard line. Well, for me to do analysis was basically saying the same thing. There's the punt taken on about the so-and-so yard line. He's up to the 5, the 10, the 15, and tackled at the 19. I mean, I wasn't providing any kind of analysis at all. I was basically repeating what the play-by-play guy was saying. So I know I wasn't as good as I could have been, and that wasn't my thing. Mm-hmm. I had done a little bit of talk radio in Los Angeles and had done TV sports on the news. But when I had done radio, I felt very comfortable doing it. And I did some radio in L.A. within the 17 years of doing TV. So I felt comfortable doing radio. It wasn't hard to do, speaking off the top of your head and ad-libbing and taking on the issues of the day. So coming to WFAN, even though I had to catch up, and I had always followed New York sports to begin with. My agent was from New York, and a good friend that I had for 25 years. So, I mean, I followed New York media, Marv Albert, Howard Cosell. I mean, all these people, the voices of the Rangers, voices of the Knicks, voices of all the pro teams in New York. So, I mean, I kind of knew how the teams were doing, even if I did Jets and Giants also. And even though I wasn't there or here in person to see them, you know, that was my number one interest. Wasn't a 49er fan, wasn't an Oakland. I was a Giants fan because of their roots in New York as the New York baseball Giants. And had they never moved along with the Brooklyn Dodgers, would have been a New York baseball Giants fan, and easy to come over to the Mets as a National League fan my whole life. And I never felt San Francisco, when I was growing up there, was a major league city. And the first professional team that I ever saw was their AAA team, the San Francisco Seals, named after all the seals that appear on the rocks off the coast of San Francisco, off the coast of the Pacific Ocean there. And the San Francisco Seals were very popular. They had Joe DiMaggio, and they had Lefty Gomez, and they had Lazzari and Grissetti and a number of Yankees. And so before the Giants and Dodgers moved west, most San Francisco fans were San Francisco Seals fans, and their favorite major league team was the Yankees, because of all the San Franciscans that had been, you know, taken from the AAA team there to Yankee Stadium. And, of course, Joe DiMaggio, the most famous of the San Francisco Seals, and his two brothers also played for the minor league team. And the Pacific Coast League, which is what the San Francisco Seals were in, featured other teams where you saw Billy Martin, where you saw a number of Jerry Coleman, also a Yankee second baseman. Of course, Billy Martin, everyone knows. And the bottom line was, so there was always a New York connection with San Francisco. And to this day, when Susan Waldman and John Sterling go out for the Yankees to play Oakland, they usually stay in San Francisco at a hotel, and they will eat in what is the Little Italy section of San Francisco called North Beach. And as you walk along the streets of North Beach, this Italian section, you'll see on the windows of most of the Italian restaurants pictures of DiMaggio, pictures of Lefty Gomez, of Frankie Grissetti and Lazzari, and, you know, all of these great Yankees that came from San Francisco or the area right close by. So, you know, to this day, San Francisco is very New York friendly, always has been, and probably always will be.
Of course, and a connection that St. John's has to the San Francisco Giants is Joe Panik. He was a player for St. John's.
Absolutely. No kidding. And he was a Met for a little while. Yep. His first year with the Giants, now I'm no longer a Giants fan, obviously, but that's a long time ago, but his first year with the Giants, I took notice, and I'm sure guys from St. John's are proud for him. Yep. And we had his father on WFAN. I interviewed his dad right after, you know, he was with the Giants, and how proud his father was. He had a great rookie year with the Giants, but then he kind of tailed off and, you know, and so forth, and not really realizing, I'm sure, some of the dreams that he had for himself. But that rookie year for the Giants, he was very good, and his father, and I'm sure his dad and family, still very proud of him. No reason not to be.
Mm-hmm. I love seeing him in a Mets uniform because he was right at home.
Yeah, right. Yeah. He didn't do much with the Mets, but it was fun to see a local kid, yes.
Yeah, it definitely was. How did you initially get into the building at WFAN? I'd love to hear that story.
Well, getting into the building wasn't difficult because I was taking care of my parents. They were getting older, and they were not in the best of shape. So I used to think that maybe this is God's plan, that I would be in between gigs, being able to spend time with my parents. But my agent from here, you know, said they're going to hire you. They showed them a videotape. I wasn't even hired with an audio tape because I had been doing, as I mentioned to you, all that TV.
Yep.
And so they hired me off of a videotape and, of course, arranged for me to come out to New York. And we were not in Manhattan at the time. We were in Astoria. And so it was, I believe, in May of 87 that they flew me out and put me up at the Sheraton Hotel in the city here on 7th Avenue and then arranged for me to come in to the station. So it wasn't hard getting through the door, but again, you could look at it somewhat poetically. It took me 22 years to get through that WFAN door and be in New York. And of course, you know, very nervous in the very, very beginning when I first started because you don't know if what you're going to do is going to work or not, whether people are going to like it or not, whether you're going to be able, as I say, to sell some tickets and generate an audience. But yeah, in the beginning, it all worked out. And again, I worked at it, but you got to be lucky too. So I think you want to be good. And I also know when I'm not so good, when the energy isn't there or you make some mistakes. And I often say on the air and off the air, Max, that nobody has made more mistakes in 33 years than I have. But I've built up a pretty good standing, and people know that I've worked very hard and I'm different than the others, because I have the monologues that I do, the production pieces that I do, the things, my approach presentation. We're all given the same score. We're all talking about the same issues. But and everybody is different, like no two apples on the same tree are alike. So no two broadcasters are alike either. But I had always tried to go for a little bit of shtick and for humor. And as Kim Jones would tell you, nobody as clever on the station with what I do with my writing and production work and so forth and so on. And I love handling calls. Mm-hmm. So that has always come through. I learn from callers. I learn from moments when I didn't grow up here. And so it's New York radio history to me, unless it's, you know, the time that I was here that I was able to see and remember. So, but pretty much the history over the last so many decades of New York sports is something that I've always cherished and always relished and had always and continues to be something very important to me.
What works well is that you love doing the overnights and it's worked for you your whole career. And I also heard that you're used to it anyway, because when you were in college, you used to do your work late at night.
Correct, Max. That's right. I always felt like if I went to sleep, I'd be missing something. So I did stay up. And to this day, I don't sleep much. I have to. You know, I have to take a nap, a cat nap even, and so forth and so on. But no, I'm more comfortable, always have been, late at night, did homework late at night, you know, went to bed late at night. Even if I was a kid, my mother was telling me to turn out the lights at 11 o'clock. You know, I was really, you know, with the transistor radio that I had, or the TV on in my room with very little sound so that I wouldn't disturb or let anyone else in the house know that I was still awake. And I would also do some reading, and I would try with my radio to get syndicated radio from out of town, where I could listen to other programs, other games in other time zones, et cetera, et cetera. So I'd always been a radiophile and a radio and TV guy. And so blessed I am, Max, that if I had never come to New York, just think, I wouldn't be on with you right now. And that means a lot to me.
I appreciate it more. I remember listening to you when I was very young, because I used to have these cassette tapes I used to record music on and radio shows on. And I remember staying up late and recording your show some night.
Oh, how flattering. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm flattered by that. I mean, people like Sal Licata and some of the others at the radio station, when I first met them, they told me they grew up listening to me. Mm-hmm. And I mean, how surreal is that? You don't think about that. You worry about whether you're going to get fired. You worry about you losing your job. You worry about being laid off. You worry about taking a pay cut. I mean, I do. I don't know about others, but I do. And then they have somebody like yourself say that you recorded the program, or that Sal Licata and some of the others at the station who work behind the scenes let you know they grew up listening to you. I mean, how flattering, but also how surreal is all of that? So it is amazing. You worry about all these things, and other people are recording or complimenting by mentioning they grew up listening to you. It's just very surreal to me, but very, very flattering, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. How do you love the New York fan base? Because they are the toughest critics in the world.
Yeah, good. That's the way it should be.
Yeah.
there's an honesty there. And see, what would designate indifference? That's the enemy. When you don't care, when you care, you cheer and you boo. I mean, that's all about caring. A very passionate fan base, a very knowledgeable fan base, and Max, a very honest fan base.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, the athlete can be very hypocritical. The athlete will take all the praise, all the applause, all the adulation, and then if you boo them, they get all over you. You know, I mean, they could take the good, not necessarily can all of the athletes take the honesty that does come from a very passionate and knowledgeable fan base. So I, you know, I mean, you always get an argument from any of us on the air, or off the air for that matter, on whether or not it's right to boo. I think it is.
Yeah, I think
you
so.
You know, it's, I mean, it's an expression that you want to see them do better, that you care about their failure. And, of course, in baseball, you're failing 7 out of 10 at-bats. So, and again, as long as the effort is it, like a guy like Nimmo with the Metropolitans, not much of a hitter, and certainly not a center fielder,
no.
But he is so lovable and so likable. And, I mean, he hustles all the time. He has a lot of joy with limited ability playing Major League Baseball. No, it's hard not to like him, hard to boo him if he doesn't get himself on base. But the bottom line is, no, I think cheering and booing are part of the same family because the fans here care, because it matters to the fans here what their players and the teams they root for are doing or not doing.
I'm sure if there were fans allowed in the MetLife Stadium this year with the season that the Jets had, there would have been plenty of boos.
Oh, you think? Oh, yeah, for sure. Well, I'd like... let me ask you a question. I'd like them to get Watson. What are your thoughts, Max?
I think they should go right for Watson because now you finally have the franchise quarterback that you've been looking for. It's always going to be a question mark. I'm not sold on Darnold, never was. You draft a quarterback right in the draft like Zach Wilson or Justin Fields, you don't know what they're going to be. At least with Watson, you're sure of what he's going to be.
Yeah, the only issue is how much do you give up for him and how much do you have left to build around him. Mm-hmm. But I would definitely take the risk. And you're not going to give 18 draft picks over the next 2 years. You would have to give a lot. There's no question. But you could still build around through the draft next year, the year after that, through free agency coming up. And there's a lot of ways to improve a number of positions. But if you improve the quarterback position with a guy like Watson, you're on the right track.
I think so. And who knows if the GM, Joe Douglas, is going to get the picks right? We don't know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's a crapshoot to draft anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no sure thing. So, and there is a sure thing with Deshaun Watson. So
right.
I would give what you got to give to get him and trade Darnold and get the pick or two for him. And with the other picks, so this year and next year, and the year after that, I mean, you know, if you're going to give 3 or 4 number ones, you can give number 2 and number 23 this year. Mm-hmm. You can give 1 from next year, 22, and you can give 1 from 23 or 1 from 24. It doesn't have to be all done at once. And Houston, when they eventually realize that, yeah, if they haven't already, when they do make it public that they're going to be trading Watson, either the Jets or Miami can offer the best offer for Houston.
Miami is very interesting because I am a big Tua Tagovailoa fan. I think he could really be a franchise quarterback for that team.
Well, I mean, you know, again, I mean, yeah. I mean, who? Why not? You know, until proven otherwise, until we see otherwise, there's no reason to think that the upside isn't there.
Because mm-hmm. he did win a national championship with Alabama. I remember that.
Yeah, oh, sure. Well, you know, again, there's all the analytics in the world and the eye test. You combine everything because you can never have more information. You can never have enough information, whether it's analytics, whether it's, you know, all the decimal points and all the decimal points and all the percentages and And however you want to, you know, add it all up. You take everything into consideration. You take what you can see, and you put everything together, and then you'll know, you know, whether it's working or not with just about any player in any sport.
An interesting question I have for you regarding building your fan base. How do you think you build a fan base doing your radio show for so many years?
Say again, Max, I didn't get all of that.
Oh, an interesting question that I have regarding your show and your fans. How do you believe that you built the fan base all those years?
Yeah, maybe I've even lost some over the years, too. You never know. The ratings have always been very good. And there's nobody in my hours that has better ratings, if I may say. Mm-hmm. So, and I think a lot of that has to do with the people listening. And I think a lot of it, Max, has to do with the people calling and whatever I can muster up over the course of overnight under the covers. So the ratings have always been good. And I think a lot of that is good luck, and a lot of that is timing, and a lot of that is, you know, paying attention as best you can to doing the best job you can. And I've always, every single day, look at the next day. You see, in our business, Max, what we do, you're only as good as yesterday. And you have to worry about today, and then you have to worry about tomorrow. You can't sit on yesterday, and I can't say to myself, well, gee, I've been around for a long time. All I have to do is come in and sit in front of the microphone. No, it doesn't work that way. And you have to work at it every day. And if it's something you care about, if it's something you love doing, if it is a labor of love, that's for sure. I mean, there are jobs and there are careers. Mm-hmm. And a career is what I have and what you have, and you have one, and you'll continue, God willing,
you
know, throughout adulthood, and you'll probably, you know, reach as many stars as you want to reach, Max, but your career is already underway. So what we do is a labor of love. We have it in our DNA. We have it in our genes. We have it in our guts. In our soul, and so it is something with pleasure that we look forward to doing every single day. People ask me, "Are you ever thinking of retirement?" And I always say, Max, how do you retire from talking?
Exactly. It's not that much effort, especially if you love doing it. And that's something that I've always noticed with your shows, is that you have the passion. You're the most unique radio personality that I've ever heard on the radio. From the monologues and everything that I've heard, there's no other Steve Summers. There's no one like you.
Well, you're very kind to say, Max. And listen, you know, over the years, you hear it all. You hear good, you hear bad, you hear indifferent, you know, and, you know, you don't ever lose any of your sensitivity, but it's a business where you're going to hear the good and the bad, and you just continue as long as you're able to continue to do it, because we don't sign our own checks. And you know, if you work for somebody else, there's policy and, you know, rules and regulations that the radio station has to follow. But for the most part, I've been lucky because I've had their encouragement. They leave me alone, mainly because the ratings are very good. So, but if they fall, I'll get the memos, I'll be chided, I'll be reprimanded, I'll be kicked in the rear end and told to be a little bit better. And I've had plenty of that over the years. So you know the good, you know the bad, and from the audience, you know the good, you know the bad. So you take it and deal with it and move forward. And as long as you believe in what you believe in, and you can look at yourself in the mirror and not have any regrets if somebody doesn't like the way you think about a particular issue, they can differ. And I certainly respect everybody else's opinion if they're not mine. That's what makes the world go round. Some people overreact. And will you know, get on your case because you don't say what they want to hear. But if you are saying what you believe in, you've won the battle.
Mm. Something that's
Max, I only have a few more minutes because then I have to get ready.
Oh, yes, for you.
So maybe we can wrap it up. And listen, and I'm always available, believe me. Mm-hmm. So we can always have a part two or down the road. You know, if somebody bails out on you or a guest you have, you know, is there, give me a call. I'll be more than happy to do it again. But I do have to rush before too very long here. Maybe another minute or two or three, if that's okay with you.
Yes, that's perfect. The question I was going to ask you was, actually in preparing for your radio show, it's a good segue. How much time goes into preparing for your radio show each night?
Yeah, that's a great question, Max. It all depends on what's happening that day.
Mm-hmm.
Today, for example, you have Panarin and his leave of absence from the Rangers, and I'm sure you're aware of that story. And we also have Domingo Germán addressing his teammates about his situation. And then from the weekend, we have the Nets and the Knickerbockers. So there's four things right there. And then a number of other things going on as well. But always New York is going to be a number one focus, number one priority with any kind of story. And then you go from there. But with nine professional teams and a number of terrific college teams, including St. John's, which is right at the top of the list, you're always paying attention to that. But New York Sports Talk Radio is really with the nine professional teams, more so than with college. Now, next month with March Madness, I mean, obviously we're going to get more into with the college basketball, but for really 11 months out of the year, it's one issue or another with the nine pro teams that make up the tri-state area, make up New York City.
Mm-hmm. And as you heard it right there, that's what goes into preparing for your shows. Steve Summers, I know you have to leave. Is there anything else you would love to tell the audience at St. John's University?
Well, it's been a pleasure with you, Max. And I'm serious. I think it's just great that you thought of me and very flattering to be on, you know, with St. John's radio. I mean, to me, that's a good one, and that really makes my night. So I'm glad that you wrote the letter that you did,
mm-hmm.
And the next time you see John Mingo, tell him we miss him, and we think of him, and I'm sure I'll talk with Mingo before too very long. But thank you so much for having me, Max. Absolute pleasure on my part.
You're welcome, and thank you. It was an honor to even have you on my radio show, a legend in the game for so many years. And I'm sure I'll be tuned into the show tonight.
Thanks, Max. Take care of yourself, and always the best of luck.
You too. Thank you, Steve.